everyone. Welcome to another good episode, really good episode, I hope, for Retro Rewatch. I don't know where this came from. Yeah, today is a little bit random. I've just finished a work day here. I'm in Portugal, and yeah, we're gonna do a show. And I have with me, as usual, my compatriot, my partner in crime, my disciple, maybe? Jeff, I have with me Jeff, of course. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, and I'm glad, despite all of the other things that are going on, we were still able to find time to record.
Yes.
And I have a hypothesis on why you said you hope this is another good episode of Retro Rewatch, and it's because we just did an episode where we talked about how disappointing a Stargate SG-1 episode was.
Oh yeah.
And our episode that covered the first half of that two-parter was the same.
That's true.
And so now here we are back and past two disappointing episodes.
Yeah.
So hopefully this one is good. And that's all I've got.
That's all you got. I think you're absolutely right. I think that's what it is. So let's just jump right in. I have, of course, maybe I should mention what we're going to watch. So this is Stargate SG-1 Season 3, Episode 2, titled Seth. I do not have any German title for it. For some reason, none of my sources could come up with it. So maybe it's Seth. Maybe
it was just Seth.
I guess so. It's not noteworthy. It was released or aired first July 2nd, 1999 in the US and September 29th, 1999 in the UK. So, yeah, summer. IMDb rating... let's put it this way. If we think the last two episodes were disappointing, based on the IMDb rating, this one should be worse. So, we'll see.
Huh, that's very interesting.
7.2 is the rating. I think 7.9 was the previous week. So, yeah. It is okay. It is written by Jonathan Glasner, so one of the producers. And directed by Bill Corcoran. I hope I pronounced that correctly. It's the last of two episodes directed by him. And if I had been smart, I would have looked up which episode he directed before. But yeah, I forgot. I mean, I could do it right now, but nah. Too much work. Way too much work.
Well, while you keep talking, I'll see if I can find it real quick.
Good. We have a bunch of guest stars, and I think one you will particularly be happy about is Carmen Argentiano as Jacob Carter or as Selmac. So he's back.
That did make me happy.
That's good. Yeah, me too. I mean, I like seeing Jacob. Like, he's a good character, and I remember you were very sad when we didn't get him after Secrets, I think, after the Tok'ra episodes, and then he came back for the Ritu one, and this time, yeah, he's back, so we get more Selmac and more Jacob Carter, so that's fun.
So the other episode he directed, One False Step.
Okay, so he got a second chance, but he never got a third.
but here's the interesting thing. This guy is a very prolific director, and he directs TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
And
a lot of them.
Yeah, like all the way back to 1980.
Wow.
Excuse me. And he most recently directed... in 2004, A Widow Seduced. Sure. So maybe that was a made-for-TV movie.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. He's, yeah, I, I'm It looks like he does some stuff for Hallmark Channel because mm-hmm. there's some Christmas movies in here.
Yeah. And that's a pretty steady income source.
Sure. I mean, that is a market.
It is.
But he's directed a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Even looks like some that's a made for TV movie. Even an episode of Stonerville.
Stonerville. Okay. Yeah, let's continue with the guest stars. I think it's more interesting. We got Robert Duncan as Seth Fargo or as Sitesh. Sort of quote. You've seen him before. Not that long ago. Because he was Daniel Jackson's father, Melbourne Jackson, in the Stargate SG-1 episode, The Gamekeeper.
No. Huh. Okay.
Yeah. So that's him. We got Mitchell Kosterman as Special Agent James Hamner. We have Stuart O'Connell as Tommy Levinson, who previously played a sergeant in the episode There But For the Grace of God. He was on the alternate Earth. I mean, recently. Okay. That's a year ago. More than a year ago. We have Lucia Walters as Disciple One. Gets a credit for some reason.
Probably had a line.
Yeah. Greg Michaels as Jason Levinson and Rob Morton as Sheriff. So those are the credited people. This episode also marks the death of Sitesh, as we know, because hopefully you've watched it. He's the third powerful Goa'uld who's killed on SG-1.
It seems the Tari are pretty good at taking killing out Goa'uld.
Yeah, they've killed three in their history so far as we know at least. Maybe more, who knows?
Right.
Seth Kalt might be somewhat familiar, I would say. there's a real life resemblance to it. The Branch Davidian cult headed by David Koresh.
Oh yeah.
Both had long hair and were kind of casual clothing, while having his share of concubines, like both of them. And in 1993, so about 4 years before this, actually more than 4 years, almost 6 years before this aired, federal agents, including members of the ATF, surrounded and attempted to storm the compound when it was discovered that he had a large stockpile of weapons. And ultimately, the siege ended in a fire that killed 75 people, including the leader. So some parallels here.
Yeah. Man, I had forgotten about the whole Branch Davidian thing. Mm-hmm. Although it explains why this seemed so familiar as I was watching it.
Now you know.
Now I know.
Little production tidbit. The compound is actually now I'm going to butcher the name and I'm very sorry about it. Minakata Lodge. I want to say, in Minakata Regional Park in Coquitlam, whatever. I'm bad with names, sorry, especially Canadian ones. Probably native ones. I mean, this is, it sounds like it.
Yeah, I think that's First probably, Nation, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you want to go there, it's actually not far from Vancouver. So. It's kind of in the area, so easy to get to. Looks like a cool compound, so maybe. And the regional park, probably cool as well. Yeah. There's a couple other things I want to mention later, but we'll get to that. So, little, let's call it side note.
Mm-hmm.
I did not actually watch this episode. I forgot. I was traveling and stuff, and we were kind of recording a little bit shorter notice. It was a bit of a mess. scheduling wise. So I actually didn't watch it. So that would be interesting. I haven't, I mean, I've seen it before a million times. I remember roughly the story, but I don't have my usual notes. I actually asked Perplexity to come up with notes. So
we'll see
how useful or not so useful that actually is. But maybe
considering between the two of us. Considering how bad I am at getting things in the right order, if you hadn't said anything, I bet no one would notice.
Yeah. They're probably not, yeah. But I mean, it should at least get the things in the right order. It's just a question of, did it imagine things that didn't happen?
Well, if it did, hopefully those are good things.
Yeah. So, as far as I know, do we get a previously on? It says so here. Maybe not.
I don't, you know, I don't remember seeing a previously
on. Okay, so maybe it because I gave it a transcript with a previously on as an example, maybe it added that.
There might have been one.
So,
and, and because, excuse me, if there had been, I probably was, okay. When I watched the episode, I tend to make a bowl of popcorn and put my feet up, sit back on the couch, watch the episode with my office manager. And so I'll start the episode, and if there's a previously on, I'm probably doing other stuff.
Yeah, I do that too. Or I skip over it. I'm like, okay, fast forward.
So if there was, I just completely blanked it out.
Good.
But I do not remember one.
Okay, maybe there was one, maybe there wasn't. We will never know. No, I'll actually watch the episode later and then I'll know. Jacob returns to Earth with urgent Tok'ra intel. Seth, an ancient Goa'uld, was never accounted for after the Stargate was buried. Good to know.
Good to know.
Many Tok'ra...
Maybe something we should have talked about earlier, but
yeah,
okay,
like
thanks,
many,
Jacob, for telling us now.
I mean, a little bit earlier, at least. I mean, the Tok'ra have not been involved with humans for that long, like half a season, basically.
Okay, that's fair.
So maybe they're just now getting around to that. Many Tok'ra died to find him, and now they believe he survived, hiding as a cult leader in the Pacific Northwest. Very convenient. It's the Pacific Northwest. It's not Austria or Egypt or Japan or whatever. No, it's like the Pacific Northwest.
Well, it does make the on-location shots work so much easier.
Exactly.
Yeah. Also,
yeah.
Want to point out, I have lamented the fact that they didn't do a storyline I'm sorry about my my cough today, people. Mm-hmm. Forest fires. So I've been talking about we should have had the whole thing with oh my god, the big gold.
Apophis, which one?
Apophis, thank you. Apophis.
Mm-hmm.
Hiding on Earth and building up a following on Earth. And now we're actually getting that in an episode.
Yeah. I think when you said
it's not Apophis.
Yeah, when you said that, I had to hold that back because I knew that this was coming.
Your self-control is amazing.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much more you don't know about. Exactly. So there's the story. Basically, Jacob lays out a 2,000-year trail of mysterious death cults and... that leads to Daniel launching into research mode and being like connecting all of them to Seth using old records and press clippings and Egypt and Greece and the 19th century England and always ending in mass suicide or disaster. How nobody else put that together until Jacob or Salma came in?
Okay, I can tell you why.
Okay.
It's because Daniel did a Boolean search.
Oh, that's why.
I mean, seriously, it's a thing that he says. Oh, well, I did a Boolean search, and he listed all the terms that he used in his Boolean search. So clearly no one has done a Boolean search on Seth.
Yes. That's so funny. Yeah. So that's, I think this is the intro, the teaser.
And now, okay, as a teaser, it does give us a good setup for what the episode is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just fine.
Fine.
Yeah, I mean it's nothing spectacular, mm-hmm. but it does let us know, okay, we're going to the Pacific Northwest very conveniently to find a Gwold who is a cult leader and building up a following on Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, it's it's yeah, I yeah. think I think Daniel, I saw in the transcript, Daniel mentions also something that we probably haven't even scratched the surface on meeting all the global system lords. It's probably thousands of them. And Jacob says, yeah, it's only a dozen or only dozens on the rank of system lords, but thousands of global generals. So there's, I mean, we get a little bit of a sense of the hierarchy as well. It's like, okay.
Yeah, so that's cool.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see. So it's like they basically figure out that there is kind of a another Gwold in the Seth in the. Let's say, Seattle area. That's what they mm-hmm. say, Seattle area. In reality, it's near Vancouver, but it's close enough.
Close enough.
Yeah. So, I mean, the research is quite funny. I think I wrote down somewhere there was one thing. The information that he actually presents is information slash history from the White Wolf role-playing game, Vampire the Masquerade.
Oh my god, that's funny.
So, it's not even the real deal.
So, okay, one thing that I thought was interesting, which I think is right about here in the, mm-hmm. the storyline, we find out that Jacob and Selmik
mm-hmm.
are here on assignment, not because Jacob volunteered for it, but because Selmik did,
mm-hmm.
his symbiote.
Mm-hmm.
Because Selmik feels like Jacob needs to address the whole thing with his bad relationship with his son.
Mm-hmm.
So they give us a setup for a B story.
Ah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the B story doesn't really happen.
Yeah, it's kind of useless. Yeah, there's a little bit back and forth where, like, basically Carter also says, like, yeah, I haven't really seen him since his kids were born. Like, so apparently there's bad blood between in the Carter family.
Well, we have established many episodes ago, yes. This is a dysfunctional family.
Yeah, it is. It is. By the way, there was also a funny thing that Teal'c had a joke. I remember that.
Oh, right.
Jaffa joke. Yeah. So, a serpent guard, a Horus guard, and a Sitesh guard meet on a neutral planet. It's a tense moment. The serpent's guard eyes glow, the Horus guard's beak glistens, the Sitesh guard's, nose strips. And that's the joke.
And that's the joke. But what makes it super funny is that Teal'c is clearly finding the humor in this. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just thinks it's the funniest joke ever.
Yeah.
And everyone else just stands
there. Yeah, nobody else gets it. Yeah. So.
And he doesn't explain mm-hmm. it either, which is great.
Yeah. So, long story short, Daniel found in the. He did a search in US government classified data, which he has access to, maybe, apparently. And the CIA, which is funny enough that he has access to that, has a record of something that the ATF did, something somewhere. And the ATF actually found this cult leader, Seth, in the north of Seattle. And the ATF is actually investigating him right now. He is armed, and his compound is fortified. And he has about 50 followers. So,
Yeah, it was weird that it was like, well, he had to go through CIA to get to ATF. Mm-hmm. Why not? If you're searching all these secret government yeah. records, why not just have a pop-up as ATF? But whatever, it's fine.
Yeah. The reason why Daniel thinks that this might be actually who they're looking for is because he says they were deprogrammed ex-members of the cult that described Seth as having magical powers and the ability to heal. He murdered several members in front of others. Okay, so far so normal. And the best part, several independent reports have stated that the cult leader can make his own eyes glow.
Well, there we go.
Hint. How this didn't come up in the past is like, I mean, the first thing after Apophis came to Earth and like his eyes glowed was like a big Google search or secret classified document network internet search for glowing eyes.
Right.
But okay.
Well, the federal government moves in mysterious ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they basically fly to the compound, the perimeter.
Right. And what a surprise. They ran into someone who's already watching the compound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they ran into more people watching the
compound. Yeah. So first they run into the local sheriff.
Well, maybe in the Pacific Northwest, they have a regional term for sheriff called sheriff because there's shells on the beach.
Yeah. We get a little bit, like a tiny little tidbit from him that he hopes they can shut him down because he's had parents that came to his office. They lost their kids to this. He calls it this nut. But he doesn't have the manpower or the probable cause to do anything about this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. They're like, okay, he says, gotta go, and they go looking around. And then another man pops up, as you said.
Right. And this is just a guy
mm-hmm.
who's there, and he's like, hey, my kid's in there, and I need to get him out.
Yes. So his boy, Tommy, Jason Levinson, and he's been there 9 months, apparently. And he hired a guy, but he got shot in the leg when he tried to get in there. So.
Yeah, that's a good deterrent.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, so.
So then they ran into, into ATF.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then they run into the ATF. I think they first do like a little bit snooping. They look a little bit at the compound. Oh,
that, Yeah, they're poking around, and ATF finds them poking around.
Yeah, exactly. So they see, like, oh, they have like AK-47s, they have Uzis, they have like a bunch of weapons. I think Jack says, anyone think they observed the requisite 15-day waiting period for those weapons?
Yeah. Okay, that's very funny.
And they see that they have Zats. So they have Zats.
Right. Zats. Yep. Sam calls that out.
Mm-hmm. And yep. that's where they they want to go back, and that's when they, I think when they go back to their van, the ATF guy, Special Agent James Hammer, shows up.
Yeah, and okay, so that leads to an interesting confrontation, but a trope in shows where you have the different government law enforcement agencies clashing instead of cooperating. And of course, that's exactly what happens here.
Yeah.
And for lack of a better term, it's a dick wagging contest.
Yes, it is.
And okay, so I like that ATF just takes it right to the top.
Yeah.
And ends up on the phone with the President of the United States.
Yeah.
And after the call, the ATF guy, he's like, so the President knows you and he speaks highly of you.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And Jack is just like, yeah, you know, I know the guy, whatevs. And then the ATF guy says, and you're in charge now.
Yeah.
And Jack's first reaction is, well, get me a cool jacket then.
That's so true. Yeah. There's actually a little bit before that because.
Well, of course there is, because I never get it in the right order.
Well, kind of. You kind of got the gist of it, but there's like a little, like, as you said, this dick measuring context. Like, because remember, Jacob also is a general, right?
Oh, so, that's right.
So the Hamner kind of talks to him and is like, what interests us the Special Force have, the Air Force have here? And he says, that's classified. I said, so are you Special Forces? He says, it's also classified. Hamner he says, oh, I have top level clearance. And he says, not top enough. That's what Jack says.
Not top enough.
And Hamner comments to Jacob, like, oh, you have a rather insubordinate.
Yeah. Yep, that's Jack.
Yeah. But they get briefed then by Hamner on okay, like this guy, Seth Fargo, and that they've been kind of watching him. Mostly they're interested in him because he has a horde of prohibited weapons in there. So, you know, ATF, right? It's their job. Right. As you said, like he kind of doesn't want them there. That's this whole troop, a trope where it's like, oh, it's not your jurisdiction, and you should leave. And then Jacob says, let's call the President. And that's what they do. They talk a little bit. While I think this is going on, they take a talk also a little bit about what's going on the compound.
And I think this is where Sam speculates with no information whatsoever that they must have tunnels.
No, I think that happens later. Mostly
at this
point.
Oh, of course it does.
At this point, I mean, they speculate a little bit about brainwashing, right? We've seen brainwashing before. So, I mean, he's a Goa'uld and he's followers. Like, how did he end up in that position? Some sort of brainwashing must have happened, right? And Jacob says, I mean, it could be it's something called Nishta, which is kind of a, yeah, it says it's a biological compound that when it's inhaled, it makes your mind extremely pliable. But it's stronger than what Hathor used, right? We had this happen when Hathor was around. I mean, she was, mm-hmm. I mean, she had been out of the game for like, millennia. So what Seth is using apparently is a little bit newer than that. Because it is more, he calls it more encompassing.
All right, well,
yeah,
that's great. Despite the fact that he's been isolated mm-hmm. on Earth for a couple thousand years.
Yes, yeah, but apparently, I mean, less thousand years than Hathor was, I guess.
Okay, fair enough.
So it has kind of the same that there's a similarity to what Hathor was using, because once someone has been affected once it has like left your body, whatever you like, you cannot be reinfected, kind of like it's done, like it's a one and done, like as long as you keep it up it works, but once you're off it, you like it doesn't work.
Then that's it.
Yeah, you can become immune. And there's one way to reverse it, which is very conveniently an electrical shock. Where have we heard this before?
Right. Hey, let's shoot our son. That'll fix everything.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what Teal'c says. It's like, oh yeah, that worked when I shot Ryak with the Zed.
Yeah.
Well, and Daniel says, well, it's not going to be very covert that way. And also, any kind of frontal attack is probably not a good idea.
Probably not.
Also, they have a lot of weapons.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when we get the call from the president. So, like, the whole thing where it's like...
Boy, I really did jump ahead.
You did really jump ahead. Because like Hamler takes a call, so I guess Jacob called someone and that person then called the president, and the president then called back or called Hamler, I guess. mm-hmm. Because you don't just call the president out of the blue. That's not how it works.
That explains a lot of the troubles in my life.
Yeah. You don't call the president. That's the trouble.
I keep trying to call direct, and
never. He's doesn't answer.
Then these men in black show up at my door. And, yeah,
yeah. But then Hamner like gets asked like for like Jack O'Neill, and O'Neill says like something I can do, and then O'Neill gets called into the tent from the Hamner ATF guy, and that's what you said, where it's like. He just talked to the to the president. He seems to have a thing for you, he says to Jack.
which is a funny line.
Yeah, and in fact, he is, or Hamner is supposed to issue an emergency special agent credential to put him in charge of this operation. And that's when he says, I need
like
one
that's
of those
even things. A thing, but okay.
Yeah, and Jack says he wants one of those cool jackets, extra large, double XL if you got it. Jack must be pretty large. Or he just wants a big jacket, who knows?
I think he just wants a big jacket. I think it's more about my jacket's bigger than your jacket.
Yeah, and Hamner wants to know, like why is the Air Force so interested in his cult? And O'Neill just says, you want to do me a favor? On the way out, send my team in.
Well, we know who won that contest.
and O'Neill, like O'Neill is like kind of a conspiratorial voice. He says, like, since you have clearance, I'll throw you a bone. Seth and his boys got their hands on some top secret technology that we would prefer not to fall into public's consciousness yet. Comprehend? So He kind of gets him off his back, I guess. Giving him enough that he's going to shut up.
And but you know, he's also telling him the truth.
Mm-hmm. He is
from a certain point of view.
In a way, part of the truth at least. I mean, they do have some secret technology. They also have some other stuff that are secret, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Daniel has some, like, I think we get a little bit exposition now because Daniel has some important information. He's like, well, I mean, if like, it's a core world, right? So we can assume that his MO hasn't changed from history, and we know things from Giza, from the Valley of Kings, and so on. So, I mean, he was in Egypt, right? Totally right. Assuming that over thousands and thousands of years, he never changed anything.
Yeah.
Didn't learn anything, didn't change anything. It's like he stuck to what he knew like thousands of years ago.
Because, of course.
Yeah. And that's where we get the tunnels, basically, the car dimensions. Well, right. Daniel says, yeah, so now, Daniel says, no, actually, Daniel says that they, I mean, he's the Egyptian guy, right? So he says, oh, they had tunnels, and Carver says, so we should do a search and find tunnels.
And what do you know? They do find tunnels.
Yeah, and what do you know? They find tunnels. But then that's a problem, right? Because, okay, they now have a way to enter. But like
they have to worry about the super drug.
Yeah, the Nishta. Yes, because I mean, if they just waltz in there, I mean, they're probably. I mean, who knows? At least Daniel and Jack and Carter would be dosed. I mean, I don't know what effect it has on Salmak. But also that's the other problem, because if he is a Gold, he'll probably sense that Carter at least and Selmak also have Golds in them, or had.
Right. So ultimately Selmak and Teal'c, they can't go in.
Correct.
Which means Jacob and Teal'c can't go in.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But Carter has an idea.
And luckily, they have everything they need to make it work.
Yes, exactly. So Daniel basically gets like a little earpiece. And Carter, I think. Daniel and Carter go in, right?
Daniel and Carter go in, and they both have the little earpiece.
Yeah. And but the earpiece is not just any earpiece. It's like a little mini zap gun.
Right. And and it's also a microphone transmitter. So
yeah.
They can monitor what's being said in the compound.
Yeah. But they have to wait until the compound has basically completely taken over their bodies, because otherwise it's not going to work.
Oh, right. Yep, yep. So, yeah. So that we already know that's going to be a problem because they just told us.
Because they just told us that this is important.
So here's the problem.
This is important. So of course it's going to be a problem. So they go in. Carter kind of quips and says, "Like, are you're certain they're really going to turn us into zombies rather than kill us?"
And the response should have been, of course they'll just turn you into zombies because you have a multi-season contract.
Yeah, that's true. But Daniel has a different answer. He says, well, I mean, at least we're more valuable to him that way. And why? Because, well, women he uses as harem, so Carter is quite beautiful. And the men outside the main court were used mostly as warriors and guards, so pretty much doing his bidding. So he thinks, okay, like you probably could use some manpower, right? Even though Daniel is not the guard or warrior type, but okay.
No, he is not. So, you know, Sam will probably survive.
Yeah. O'Neill says, Dara asks about the man inside the compound, and Daniel says, they were turned into, eunuchs?
Eunuchs.
Yeah, and O'Neill says something, and I have that as a like a reference. He says, eunuchs, as in snippety-doo-dah, sweet, he says, which is like a little reference to something. It's the
right.
The song Zippity Doo Dah from this film Song of the South.
Uh huh. Snippity doo dah, snippity day.
Uh huh.
Which would not be a wonderful day, as the rest of the song implies.
Nope. Yeah. So they end up in a large chamber, but there is nothing. There's no stairs, no doors. It's like it just ends. Well, turns out there's transport rings.
You know, as if we didn't have enough evidence that we're dealing with a Goa'uld already.
Yes, now it's clear. So they get beamed up or transport rigged up into the throne room, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, they're immediately captured.
Yes. I mean, sure. And Jack says, I hate when that happens. Because he says.
Right.
Yeah. And he gets asked who it is. And of course, I mean, Jack never, like, in this situation, he always jokes. So he says, I'm Larry. This is Mo. And of course, everyone's favorite, Curly.
Pointing to Sam.
Yes.
Yep.
And that's when we see his eyes glow, and then he raises his hand, and then like we see them get taken over by Nishtha.
Yep, the brain mist hits him.
Mm-hmm.
So when they show Sam next,
mm-hmm.
which I think is the next scene.
Yes, it is.
She's with all the women at his mm-hmm. feet.
Yes.
Adoring him.
Yes. Yeah.
And Amanda Tapping,
mm-hmm.
the way she played that scene,
mm-hmm.
I thought was great, because yeah. I'm watching her, sorry. And I can't believe it's Amanda Tapping.
I want to stop you there, because we don't get yet to that scene.
Oh, crap.
She wakes up for... She does wake up with the, like, other female disciples. She's wearing, like, a white robe of some sort. And there's this other female cult member that I mentioned earlier, which... what was her name? The actress's name? I don't remember. But it's like... where was it? Here.
It's funny.
Lucia Walters. Okay. Lucia Walters. That's her
actor. Yeah, you said, what's her name? As if I would be able to recite that back to you. I can't get the scenes right for a show I just watched.
Yeah. But she asked Carter, she's like, do you feel strong enough to be of service for your god Seth? And Carter says, yes, of course. And then she gets...
Of course.
She will be led into the throne room. But first... Teal'c, and we get a little scene with Teal'c and Selmac, where Teal'c wants to, of course, step in, and Selmac says, well, we need to wait about an hour. It's a smart virus, and if there's unaffected tissue, then it will, like, give it safe harbor, and it will reinfect them. So we need to wait. So gives us now a timeline.
Right.
Yeah. There's,
right. Okay.
But then something something happens, because it can't be that easy, because Levinson comes in. And I remember that Levinson comes in, and he kind of wants to know what's going on. He wants to snoop, and it's like, oh, but of course he can't. And he's like, oh, can I at least get a coffee? And then he like spills the coffee, and I think he destroys some electronics.
Oh, I totally forgot about that part.
Yeah. And we get a little bit backstory about him, like about his son and whatever, and get a really interesting scene between Jacob and Levinson, because Levinson and his son also separated, and we have this whole thing what we heard earlier about Jacob and his son. Mm-hmm. And Teal'c is like, I don't understand. How could a father not speak to his son for a long time? But he says, Levinson says, yeah, but that's a funny thing. I don't even remember why. Like, it must have been some stupid thing, but it just happened. Teal'c asks Jacob about that, and he says, yeah, sometimes things get complicated.
Which is true. Sometimes they get complicated.
Yeah, but Teal'c says, well, many things are complicated. In Jaffa society, loving one's children is not one of them. And Jacob says, well, in human society, it sometimes is.
And he's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then we go to the throne room scene that you mentioned.
Okay. So, anyhow. The way Amanda Tapping plays Sam in this mm-hmm. scene to me was just creepy.
Yes. But
I mean that as a compliment, because it is so not Sam.
Yes.
And she does such a great job of playing this this mind controlled version of Sam.
Yeah. It's so great. I have that scene like burned into my memory, like where she's like, she's kind of lying kind of on the floor and she's looking up at Seth, and it's like that that completely, I don't want to call it brain dead, but kind of brain dead admiration for him.
Yeah,
like it's like madly in love, like doesn't even see reality, rose tinted glasses, like all of it,
truly, like, and she blind just, devotion.
Yeah, and she doesn't say, like she basically doesn't say anything. She just looks, that look says it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it turns out that Seth can sense the Naquadah in her.
Yeah. Yes, he can. He senses the Naquadah in her, and he asks her about it. Were you once blended? Or you were once blended. Carter is so brain dead, she doesn't even understand him.
Yeah.
And he realizes, like, she doesn't have any entry marks. So he wants to see the others, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there might be a problem.
Right. And now, I'm probably jumping ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Does she spill the beans now or later? In my mind, it all happens at once.
Kind of. So now we do get we do get like kind of mini A plot B plot, because we're switching back and forth between the throne room and the tent, because I mean it's getting pretty dicey.
We have A and A and a half,
yeah. So Seth asks about the Tok'ra, and he becomes a little bit angry. who does the military work for, the system lords or the Tok'ra? And Carter, as I said, completely brain dead. She is like, I have a vague recollection of what you talk about the Tok'ra. And that's the point when Teal'c and Jacob realize they have to
they have to zap her,
and they do. And O'Neill says, yeah, well, we work for a deprogrammer who hired us to come remove one of your disciples. So he's kind of still playing the game, the card.
Right. Yeah. Of course. They don't want Seth to know that they're not under his control anymore.
Yeah. And Daniel kind of tries to play and says, but now we're enjoying the bliss that is Seth, which he, of course, doesn't believe because they lie to him.
Of course.
Yeah. And armed at that point, the ATF or Jacob and whatever is surrounding the compound now because, of course.
Yeah, because they know the jig is up and so they have to make a move.
Yeah, so Seth tells SG-1, you will pay for bringing this down upon us. And he is like sends his disciples to take them and kill them. Like he says.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, of course, that leads us to our action scene.
Yes. So, basically, O'Neill is able to distract them and knock the gun away, and Carter can grab the Zat and shoot him, which frees the disciple, so...
And what an amazing coincidence.
Yeah, it's his.
The person she shoots is the kid of the guy that's outside spilling coffee on electronics.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So basically, SG-1 is now freeing everybody and sending them down with the transport rings out to the... through the tunnels.
Out to the surface, yeah. And, so they have their evacuation thing going. Of course, Seth, he's still not happy.
No, of course not. I mean, he's you know, he's a ghoul, but is he ever happy? So,
right.
Yeah, so basically in the woods, there's now people coming out of the compound, out of the tunnel. And one of them is cloaked.
Right.
Yes.
And so they give us just enough of a shot to see that it's Seth. But before he escaped, he did throw a bomb by Daniel and Jack, and so they're stuck with this bomb that's going to go off.
Yes.
if they can't get away.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah.
So, all right. Well, okay. Now, here's the interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Only because I know what's coming at the end of the episode. But Seth, he has one of their hand weapon things that shoots the owie light beams.
Mm-hmm.
and so he zaps Jack and Daniel. That's how they end up with a bomb beside them, not able to escape.
Yeah.
So we see Seth using this gold weapon.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he escapes. I mean, that's the whole point. Like he goes down and he tries to hide amongst his followers, right? Doesn't work out that way. Because
Jacob
recognizes him, I think.
And Teal'c, they can sense his junior. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're able to get him surrounded but ultimately, what ends up happening is they get him cornered.
Yeah, but I think Seth uses the device on Jacob, the hand thingy. And he kind of throws Jacob against the wall because that's, you know, what Cole will do.
That's the thing.
And Carter checks on him real quick. And then Solbach says, your father will survive. Stop, Seth.
Right. And okay, but in the meantime, Jack and Daniel, they've recovered from their owie shot. Mm-hmm. So they get up and run away so they don't blow up.
Yeah, exactly. They're lucky and they got away.
And this is where the interesting thing with mm-hmm. Seth using the hand zapper yeah. comes in, because Selmick says, Sam, you need to use this.
Yeah.
And
she says,
Seth.
I can't. And she says, I can't control it. And he says, and Selmick says, you have the will within you. You must summon it. And Carter puts the device on and tries to like, and she goes after it, and Carter goes follows Seth, and he tries also to use it on her, but she's quicker. She uses the device that Selma gave her, and Seth gets thrown back against the wall, and then she checks on him and he tries again, and Carter just instinctively raises her own and blasts him into the ground, which is a really cool effect when she does that. Like, she didn't have very much control over it. She was literally just instinct was like just like hammered him into the ground, basically. That apparently killed him.
so now he's presumably dead.
Yeah.
I'd say presumably because we have seen.
No, I mean, Daniel.
We thought we're dead. Come back.
Well, that's true, but I mean, yes, and no. I mean, he's not in space or whatever where he could go somewhere or get saved by someone. I mean, he's on Earth with.
Fair, and there's no sarcophagus that someone's going to sneak him away to.
Maybe he has one, but I mean, that would require that someone takes him there. But like, they just
and that's not going to happen.
Freed right. everybody, so not going to happen. Yeah. So Daniel says, "You killed him," and Jack says, "Hail Dorothy," which of course is another reference to the Wizard of Oz.
The long-running Wizard of Oz references.
Yes.
Yep.
Because Dorothy inadvertently kills the witch. Is probably the same as what Carter did. I don't think she wanted to kill him, but I don't think she also cares too much about whether he's dead or not. It's just not her thing to kill people if she doesn't have to.
Right. Yeah. So, and so finally,
mm-hmm.
we get the Beast story.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we get that resolved. So a little extra thing, I would call it. Carter and Jacob, go visit her, their son / brother. And we see there's no dialogue. We just see them like walk up the driveway and hug Carter and Jacob, I think, hug real quick, and then they go up to the door and knock, and Mark answers. And Jacob also embraces him, and after a little, like a couple seconds, Mark also returns the gesture. So, and Jacob picks one of his grandchildren, and they're smiling, and they're entering the house, and Carter also follows and also shares a hug. So we get a little reunion, kind of, and a hopefully mm-hmm. resolution of whatever stupid thing was going on.
Yeah. So they set up a B story right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And then didn't come back to it until the end.
Yeah. And there's not even any dialogue. It's just a few seconds. And yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that is... that is it. That's the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, in case you were wondering how useful was the AI summary from Perplexity, I switched away from it after about a minute.
Okay. So you're saying for a substantial part of this, we were relying on my inability to keep scenes in the right order.
Yes. And the transcript. For the episode, which of course I could also access.
All right. Well,
yeah.
Shame on you, Perplexity, for letting us down.
Yeah, but it was an interesting experiment, so I wanted to try it. Yeah, so the end. What are your thoughts about this episode? Interesting, not so interesting, good, bad?
I thought it was interesting. And I mean, clearly, I've said many times that I love the idea of exploring a Goa'uld secretly on Earth. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be Apophis.
Yeah.
But doing something like this, building up a community of followers. And although what I expected it to be was not build up a bunch of followers so that you can kill them and then start over.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be more like building up a bunch of followers who then become an army.
Yes and no. I mean, kind of, right? Because if that had happened, he probably would have been discovered, right?
Sure.
So this way, I mean, he could basically, whenever it became too dangerous, or whenever someone, he was at risk of being discovered, he would just kill everybody or have them kill themselves and disappear and start over. Because, I mean,
yeah, I mean,
they don't care about
that. Totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm guessing what would have happened. So I think this kind of makes sense. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, it was a good idea, and I think it worked.
It did work. A thing they could have done with it is taken it in a direction where they're trying to gain more power so that they can be someone who's like behind the scenes, controlling more things.
Yeah.
And they could have become like a business leader or something, or work their way into politics somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. But maybe, I mean, we don't know who Seth was too much, right? Or Sitesh. Maybe this was more his style. I mean, different worlds, maybe.
Sure.
I mean, we heard there's like thousands of them. So maybe.
And he just wanted to be worshipped.
Yeah, maybe he just wanted to be worshipped, have like a small. I mean, like, you know, if you're the big boss, the big business leader, the big politician, the big god, that's a lot of work as well. I mean, you have to deal with all of that and manage all of it. And yes, it's probably good life, but it's also a lot.
And logistically, maybe, a small cult is easier.
Yeah, it's like point. Maybe I just need like a handful of people who worship me and who do everything I want and have a good and relaxed life. Good
and that's
enough.
Fair. Yeah. So, but I am glad that we did get something that explores what if a Goa'uld is on Earth.
Yeah. Yeah. And
they're doing something secretly.
Yeah. And I think it's also a kind of a comment on cults, right? I mean, they do exist, and there is, like, even today, like in 2025, there is still cults. There have been, even in recent years, a couple. Like, what was this? The one with some actors.
Oh, right.
What was it?
Yes. I can't remember, but the part that I
something
remember.
Something Eum, and with like brandings and whatever, like all of this.
Yeah.
Nexium, something like that.
Yeah. What I remember is that one of the actors from Smallville had gotten involved in it. And,
exactly.
And I think she ended up in jail even.
Yeah. Two of them had been involved and one of them went to jail. So, yes. I think it's Nexium or something like that, as far as I remember. Yeah, but as said, like, there's still, like, that happens. And so it's an interesting commentary on this, right? To say, hey, like, how blind the people really are, how controlled the people are. And I mean, in this case, it's literally, there's like a chemical compound or an organism, actually, I think, that controls them.
Right. But I mean, ultimately, you don't need something like that.
You don't. But it's easier if you have it, right? At least for the Goa'uld. If you're evil.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so I said it's an there's some commentary there. So did you enjoy the episode?
I enjoyed it a lot more than Into the Fire.
Okay. So you're not you're not in line with the IMDb rating, which was lower. You're like, okay, this was better than Into the Fire.
Oh, this is absolutely better than Into the Fire. I felt like the story was tighter. And I felt like there was a much clearer direction.
Yeah.
Where they were taking us in the story. And of course, I like that we have Selmick, Jacob back.
Yes, me too.
So, there was a lot in this episode that I enjoyed. Is it a great episode? No.
Okay, why not? What was the problem for you?
I can't put my finger on a specific problem. It was just a fine episode.
Yeah. So it was kind of neither good nor bad. It was like, it's fine.
I mean, it was fine. It's not like 1969, where everything in that episode was just so on point.
Yeah.
And this one, it was like everything that you need to go right in an episode for it to be good.
Yeah.
Did. It just wasn't as captivating as some other episodes.
Yeah. 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 Okay. I can see that. For me, I think, there is aspects that I'm not super happy about, especially the ATF agent is kind of, he's there for like about 5 seconds as an antagonist, and then he just basically disappears. Like, he lurks around or whatever, like little things here and there, but mostly he's like irrelevant, and it's about Jacob and Teal'c outside, basically, at the end.
Yeah. Yep, good point. I hadn't thought about that, but now that you bring it up, yeah, that's something that was there that was bothering me on some level, and I just hadn't put it together yet.
And the same problem with Levinson, right? Because same thing. Like he's kind of there in the beginning to, I don't know, up the ante and say, oh, there's like someone who's there's a personal stake now. Like they want to free this guy's son. And this parallel with Mark. But other than that, it's kind of not needed.
Yeah, they could have removed that whole element, both of those roles.
Yeah.
And it would have changed nothing in the episode.
Exactly. Or merged them into one or whatever. Like maybe the ATF agent also has a son in there, and that's why he's so involved. Like, could have done that.
Right. Yeah. And I was thinking they could have made the son, or the sheriff's son. But you don't even need the sheriff.
Oh, that's true. There's even the sheriff. There's a third person that I completely forgot about. Yeah. So yeah, it's, as I said, there's some aspects, but overall, I think it's a good story. It's a good. I do remember this one. Like it's. I actually do remember, like, without having watched it now, I do remember this episode. I know what happened. I know, and it was, for me, what stuck out was Carter and Seth. Like the way they're playing this whole situation. That's kind of what stuck out.
Yeah. I just thought of something.
Mm-hmm.
Satesh has been on Earth since Ra was on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And has Apparently. Not left.
Yes. Couldn't leave.
So does Satesh have a sarcophagus?
We assume so, yes.
So there's a sarcophagus hiding on Earth somewhere.
Yes, there is.
That could come into play later on.
Mm-hmm. Could. Yeah. How many chevrons would you give this episode?
I'll give it 5.
Okay, 5. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
5 out of 8. So good.
It's a nice middle of the road episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think I agree with you. I was thinking, is it a 6? But I think I think ultimately it's not good enough for 6. Like, it's bordering on it, and there's aspects I like, but as we just talked about, there's entire characters that are useless.
Yeah, and it's not like this one just really jumps out.
Yeah,
and I know 1969 sets a very high bar.
Yeah, or The Fifth Race, for example.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, if we say 5, this is by no means a dig on, oh, we should only have great episodes. No, it's a good episode. It's not every episode can be great and earth-shattering. I mean, you have 22 episodes in a season, and as long as you don't get, I don't know, One False Step or Emancipation or Into the Fire or Out of Mind, stuff like that. Those are bad. It's okay. Like, not every episode has to be amazing, great, the best ever. Like, and I think this is one of them. It's a good story. It's well acted, it's well produced. They get outside, so we get to the forest again, and like some compounds, right, whatever, and like outside shoots, like very little actually at SGC. It's like, it has everything you need for a decent episode, and that's exactly what it is. It's a good time. Don't look too closely at it.
Yeah, just enjoy the episode and tune in again next week.
Yeah, which is also what we should be doing. So I can tell you what next week's episode is.
Okay.
Or what it's going to be. It is going to be Fair Game.
Fair Game. Okay.
The episode is going to be Fair Game. But also the title of the episode is going to be Fair Game.
Huh. I'm trying to come up with something based on that title. And like, I don't know, like there's... Yeah.
I can tell you the German title is once again very, very spoilery, so I'm not going to tell you.
Okay. So, you know, maybe it's like they get some opportunity to do some tactical thing against the Gould, but there's ethical issues.
Okay, interesting.
That's interesting. I mean, because, you know, I'm thinking Fair Game. Well, hey, this right here is Fair Game, this opportunity, but at the same time, is this an opportunity that's appropriate to take advantage of? Are we going to become part of the problem? Are we lowering ourselves to gold standards? I am totally grasping at straws.
You absolutely are. Yeah, so I think we should just stop you here. We're going to go watch the episode, and I will make sure that I watch that one, not forget about it.
Yeah, don't let Perplexity watch it for you.
Yeah, no, that's not going to work. We'll be back next week for Fair Game. And thanks, Jeff, for doing this with me on short notice as well.
I'm glad that we're able to make the timing work out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Me too, with like travels and family stuff and all of that happening. So I know you're doing a lot of other podcasts. Can people find more of them?
My thing seems to be telling people about a couple of them each time. So how about if I mention Mac Voices Live, which is Chuck Joyner's show, and The Context Machine, which is a show Brian Chaffin and I do together.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Both good shows.
Both lots of fun. Then for getting a hold of me, you can find me on the social medias as Jay Gamut. And I'm active right now mostly on Mastodon and Blue Sky and Pixel Fed.
Very cool. Okay.
How about you?
Every week with you, almost every week, unless I'm traveling, like this week, for example, with you on the British Tech Network. Mac Show on Fridays and Big Show on Thursdays. I don't know why I switched those around, but I did. Thursdays and Fridays would have been. Everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com, takes you there, like projects, podcasts, social media links, all of that. By the way, we're also, for our podcast, on social media, at retrorewatch.com on Blue Sky, at retrorewatch at techhangout.social on Mastodon. Or it's very easy, if you have opinions about Seth or any other episode of last season, or actually any other episode we've watched, send us an email, hello@retrorewatch.com. And I want to remind you, we opened up the prediction pool for this season.
Yes.
Kind of the rest of the show if you want to, but let's see, maybe this season is the easiest. So if you have a prediction that you haven't, I mean, I would say probably you shouldn't have watched the show before, because otherwise it's kind of pointless to predict.
You're right. Then it changes from prediction to spoiler.
Exactly. So, but if you have a prediction that's based on you've never seen the show before and you just, yeah, you're guessing what's going to happen, like Jeff has been doing. Send us a message, send us an email, send us a social media message, whatever you want to do, and tell us that prediction, and we'll talk about it. We'll include it in our roster of Jeff's predictions as your predictions, and then we'll see at the end which ones worked or didn't work.
I'm betting everyone else will fare better than I do. Predictions.
We'll see. We'll see. I think there's a lot of surprises, so we'll see.
I am so looking forward to those surprises.
All right. With that, I think we should close the iris, send an electric shock through people so they'd wake up from this nightmare, and blast Sitesh into the ground and end this episode. So thanks for listening, and talk to you next time.